ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमस्कृत अनीहाक परितुष्टात्मा, अनीहाक परितुष्टात्मा, यदृच्छोपनतादहम्, यदृच्छोपनतादहम्, नोचेच्छये बवाहानि, नोचेच्छये बहावानि, महाहीरिव सत्ववान्, महाहीरिव सत्ववान्। Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. I do not endeavor to get anything, but am satisfied with whatever is achieved in its own way. If I do not get anything, I am patient and unagitated like a python and lie down in this way for many days. Purport. One should learn detachment from the bumblebees, for they collect drops of honey here and there and keep it in their honeycomb. But then someone comes and by force takes all the honey away, leaving the bumblebees with nothing. Therefore, one should learn from the bumblebee not to keep more money than one needs. Similarly, one should learn from the python to stay in one place for many, many days without food, and then eat only if something comes in its own way. Thus, the learned Brahman gave instructions gained from two creatures, namely the bumblebee and the python. Thank you for inviting me to speak. With the permission of my seniors, I'd like to say something on Srimad Bhagavatam. So, this chapter is entitled The Behavior of a Perfect Person. Nowadays, perfection is not very clearly defined. As beauty is in the eye of the beholder, so everybody thinks that what is perfection for me might be something different for someone else. Because everybody's got a different set of values, different criteria. Nowadays, it's considered perfection if you can drive fast, talk fast, if you live life in the fast lane, that is considered perfection. You can do so many things at once. And it's considered that you're perfect in that way. But here in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we learn about a different perfection, namely the real perfection of the human form of life, which is to know the Supreme Personality of Godhead, know one's own position, and one's relationship with the Supreme Lord. So, Prahlad Maharaj was speaking to this Avadhut, to this Brahman, who was lying there like a python. A python is a big snake. How many of you have seen a python? Most of you. Okay. Quite scary. Because a python might not be that fast, but it has got very unique ability for hunting. One technique is that it will just curl up on a tree and it will wait till its prey is under the tree and it will just fall on the prey, whether it be an animal or a human being. And it does not have venomous teeth. The python is not a poisonous snake. But the python is very strong. So it coils up around the creature. And then it tightens. And in this way, by tightening, it can break the bones of an animal or a human being. Can you imagine? So much strength is there. So much power is there. And then, if it's a smaller animal, it will just devour it like that. Python can expand. Sometimes you see a python lie and inside is some big animal, you know. In the Bhagavatam, it's stated that the python can eat an entire horse or even an elephant. Now, we may scratch our heads and think, how is this possible? but if the Bhagavatam says so, it is possible. So a python is not running around, where is food, where is food, where is food. It's not bothered, but it just peacefully lies in one place. And when something comes its way, then... And then it lies there for many days, just slowly digesting that creature. So we can learn from the python that we should not be worried about food. If you ask anybody why they're sitting in traffic 2 or 3 hours every day, they're like, I have to make money to buy food. But how much food can you eat? You eat your 3 chapatis, your bit of rice, your bit of dal and sabji. Why you have to work 10 hours and spend 2 or 3 hours in traffic? Where are you running to? What are you running from? So the python should be studied very carefully. Also, we can learn from the python that the python is a snake. So, as such, it is explained in the Shastra that snakes, many times, they go into the hole and they eat the mouse which is there. And then they live in the hole happily. Snakes do not usually construct their own residences. They either live on trees or in bushes or on the ground. Or, as said before, they just go into the hole and eat the mouse and live there. So they're not bothered about creating their own residence. I was just speaking to some devotee yesterday who is living just around the corner in a one-bedroom flat, which cost him 80 lakhs of rupees. A one-bedroom flat, 80 lakhs. So we can learn from the python that to spend great amounts of money just for what? For a hole in the wall is not considered quality of life. But that is what happens when we create hellish cities. Everything becomes very, very difficult. And there's another animal mentioned here, is the bumblebee. Now there is two types. There is the bumblebee and there is the honeybee. And they're explained that the bumblebee, the name is Brahmara. The bumblebee is quite content. It only collects as much as it needs. And it is not so disturbed. But the honeybee, the Masika, is greedy. And it is collecting lots and lots of honey. But later on, it cannot enjoy that honey because the hunter is coming and is taking everything away from it. And thus it becomes very disturbed, very aggravated. In the same way, a materialist is collecting vast amounts of wealth. And he's got no ability to enjoy that wealth. If you ask the person, my dear sir, why do you have 50 crores of rupees? What are you going to do with this money? Oh, I don't know. I just need more. I just want more. And they're into building empires. They're not satisfied in just amassing vast amounts of wealth for themselves. They want to build an empire to ensure that their dynasty will be very prosperous and successful. So they have to set up every son and every daughter in business and give them vast amounts of wealth. But you might think that that wealth belongs to you, but your descendants are already counting on that wealth to be theirs. So you may think, oh, this is my wealth. But your relatives, they're already counting it as their wealth. The government and the tax, the revenue service, is already counting it as their wealth. And the thieves and rogues and merchants, they're already counting it as their wealth. And investment bankers, they know. They're not counting. They know it is my wealth. I am holding it. And in this way, everybody has their own perception of whose wealth it is. And it is funny, isn't it ironic, how everybody is running after money. But the actual concept of wealth, of prosperity, is so much absent. Especially if you live in the city. You're driving around in a tin box, which is called a car, on rubber tires, at breakneck speed. Any moment you can crash and lose your life. And you're eating on the go. Everything is on the go, on the run. I was just now in Australia distributing books in Melbourne, Sydney, and Brisbane. And people have got 30 to 40 minutes lunch break. So they go out from their office, they grab a sandwich, while talking on their mobile phone, going to buy something, they stuff a sandwich into their mouth, talking to someone, trying to drink and smoke a cigarette at the same time, because they have to get back on the job in half an hour. Is this quality of life? Any rickshaw driver in Mayapur has got more quality of life than these people. In the people who work in the guest houses, they take their 1 hour lunch break, they sit down in the garden, they put their tiffins, and they take lunch in style. But we have become so sophisticated that we do not even have the time to sit down to eat our food in a proper way. Too much anxiety. Oh, meeting here, there, that. I need to make more money. Why you need to make more money? So I can enjoy life better. But you're not enjoying life now. What will ensure that you will enjoy life better then? Oh, I will, certainly. I will have an apartment in Goa, and I will have an apartment in the Himalayas. And if I'm fortunate, I'll have an apartment on Govardhan, near the golf course. So people are counting, they're making so many plans and dreams, but then their stock market crashes and they lose it all. And they're heartbroken, they're very depressed. So we should learn from these two animals and how to live life or how not to live life and how not to be attached here in the material world. Now, a saintly person, a perfect person, is one who gives proper examples for all other living entities. So Lord Rishabhdev, he was also lying there and he was not bothered by the whole activities which was going on around him. In fact, he was so much not bothered that he used to just pass stool and urine and eat everything in the same place. But the difference was that his stool and urine smelled fragrant like roses. So before we try to adopt the style of a python yogi, we have to pass the test whether our stool and urine is fragrant like roses. And if not, then we're not qualified for this type of yogic practice. So we cannot imitate those yogis who are living in such a way. In fact, we're following the example of the acharyas who are practicing yukta vairagya. They're engaging everything in the service of the Lord. Just like Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, when he went to preach to the Englishmen, he wore leather padded shoes. Now a sadhu, a sannyasi, has got no business with leather shoes. What to speak of padded leather shoes. And he wore a frock, a long coat, and a turban. And he rode in an automobile, in style. Because he knew, if the Britishers will see him dressed in such a way, they will hear what he's got to say. Because everybody knows, first thing people see is your smile. If you smile, they think, oh, this is a nice person. Let me speak to this person. Might be a crook, might be a criminal. But as long as you smile, people will think, oh, this is a very nice person. The second thing they see is your shirt. If you wear a decent shirt, people think, oh, you must be a respectable gentleman. Isn't it? If you wear one of those t-shirts with those big loud prints on it, nobody will buy your commodities or hear to what you've got to say, because you're just another punk kid who has missed his time, you know, in fashion. Just like when you pass 30, you're not supposed to wear those shirts with all those loud prints anymore. That's for the kids, you know, who rides skateboards and scooters. But nowadays, everything is upside down, you know. The 60-year-olds want to be like the 20-year-olds, and so everything's upside down. The point is the shirt. As long as you wear a nice shirt, everybody thinks, oh, you're a gentleman and a scholar. Huh? Why? Because you have spent 120 rupees and you bought yourself a shirt. And the third thing they see is shoes. Huh? What shoes are you wearing? If you come barefoot, why should I give you my money? Huh? You're poor. You don't have anything. But if you wear nice shoes, then yes, you must be a respectable person. So that is the criteria nowadays. So for preaching, he wore leather padded shoes in order to propagate the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We hear when he was living in Mayapur, he was dressed in his kopins and he was running around like a madman, chanting, Gauranga, Gauranga, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. He didn't shave, he wore long beard, long matted locks, and he was just roaming around like a mad person in entire Mayapur area. And when they came from Kolkata, one person wanted to start a preaching mission. And he was just doing his own thing. He was totally unmoved. But then, when he decided to go and preach, after he had taken sannyas, he came to Kolkata and he knocked on that door of that person. And he said, all right, I'm ready. Let's start the mission. But then he shaved up. Because if you're facing the public, they cannot deal with this avadut appearance. Now, we might think I'm a very renounced brahmachari. I don't need to shave. I don't need to wear proper clothes because my renunciation is very strong. That is all right for your own mood of detachment. But when you go out for preaching, you have to dress to please others. We eat to please ourselves, but we dress to please others. So, in such a way, we should follow the example of Srila Prabhupada and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And they are engaging everything in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead for the purpose of delivering the fallen conditioned souls. Srila Prabhupada, he gave up eating and sleeping for the sake of preaching. Nowadays, the most cherished possession of any person, even more cherished than money, is sleep. You cannot go to any store or office before 10:30, 11 o'clock. Why? Because everything is late. People get up late. They stay out late. They take dinner late. They go to bed late. Everything is late. So, if you tell people, okay, come to my office at 7:30, 8 o'clock, they say, oh, no. This is not possible. This is not possible. 11 o'clock, not before that. Because sleep is considered the most cherished activity. And everything is built around the big bed, the big griha. Even when you go to those big hotels, what is there? It's just a fancy bed and a shower and the toilet. And people spend 10, 15, 20,000 rupees for a big bed. They don't even own the bed. You're just allowed to be in there for 12 hours. Then you have to get out. So, yukta vairagya means prapanchikatya budhya hari sambandivastuna mumukshubi parityago vairagyam phalgukatyate. And what's the first part? Anasakta savishayanya taramupayunjita nirbanda krishna sambande yuktam vairagya muchate. It's explained by Rupa Goswami. This is the criteria. This is our standard for renunciation and our standard for dovetailing things in Krishna's service. So Srila Prabhupada, he would go to bed maybe 9:30, 10 o'clock at night. And by 12 o'clock, he rose. And he washed his hand and face. And he sat down to translate Srimad Bhagavatam. In those wee morning hours where everybody was sound asleep, the entire world was just immersed in ignorance, Prabhupada would translate Srimad Bhagavatam. So he has given up his sleep for us, for the sake of the conditioned soul. The python is also synonymous for sleep. We get swallowed by the python of sleep. It just swallows us. It just captures us. And we become completely covered over by sleep. So what is day for a materialist is night for a transcendentalist and vice versa. So sleep is considered a very cherished activity. But for a devotee, it's just ignorance. It's just time spent uselessly. But it might be necessary to rejuvenate the body. So Srila Prabhupada, he even gave up eating. He was eating a couple of poundfuls of food. Now, we know today I will eat two meals. We've already made up our mind, right? Or when we got up, we were determined. We know. How, we don't know, but we're going to figure it out. We're going to eat two meals because we need prasadam. We cannot live without it. But if one is absorbed in the spiritual, on the spiritual plane, the bodily activities, naturally, they reduce. Just like Raghunath Das Goswami was living in Jagannath Puri, and Lord Chaitanya was getting reports through Swarup Damodar, how is Raghunath eating? So in the beginning, because he was from very wealthy family, very wealthy background, his family used to send him money. And he would take that money and he would feed the Vaishnavas. And he would do that for some time. But then he gave it up. Because he figured, why am I accepting money from these materialistic people? It's not good. Just like in the purport to these verses, it is explained in a different section that a preacher, a sadhu, should not have the mentality, oh, this person can cook very nicely, so let me go there on a regular basis to eat these nice foodstuffs. Otherwise, he becomes part of their family, of their household, and he falls down from this level of renunciation. So we should never think that, here I've got some nice facility, let me stick around and enjoy it for a long time. It's like Srila Prabhupada, once he was in the house of a life member, he's called Agarwal, and so the discussion was going on about the snake and about sadhus. So Mr. Agarwal said, no, you stay here. Because he saw Prabhupada and his disciples were very comfortably living in his house. But he himself was inconvenienced. So, but the culture is, you let the sadhus stay in your place. But Prabhupada said, no, that is perfectly all right. It's your house. You stay. We'll move on. We'll go somewhere else. So even though that person was ready to offer his house for a prolonged period, Prabhupada did not abuse of the hospitality. And he moved on with his disciples to a different location. So a sadhu is always moving. He's not planning, okay, what facility, what enjoyment will I get tomorrow? Who will take care of me? Who will look out for me? If one is in that mentality, one is not yet fit for the renounced order of life. In Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada says that fearlessness, abhayam, is one of the main qualities of a renounced person. And he's not worried, what kind of facility will there be? Just like when we go on preaching or we arrange preaching programs. Sometimes devotees ask us, where will we stay? Or what will we eat? What will the menu be? You ever heard that question asked? Yeah, but what about prasadam? What will we eat? That's not the question of a renounced person. Because he'll just sleep under a tree. He'll just eat whatever happens, whatever comes, by the mercy of the Lord. And many times we have seen, we try to make arrangements, we try to manipulate, to take charge and control this eating and sleeping propensity. But it is not working out. Just like you might make very elaborate arrangement to cook elaborate foodstuffs. But then somehow, because of some reason, there might be too many guests, so there is nothing left for you. Or you might be slightly inattentive and your wonderful preparation just burnt and it became charcoal and you could not enjoy it and you had to throw it away. So many factors can be there which will... Sometimes we just don't have the time. Yeah, you're ready, but then something else calls you and you cannot take prasadam. So our enjoyment is already predetermined. So we should not endeavor very hard to make luxurious arrangements for our bodily comforts. For our happiness and distress is already predetermined by our karma. So... when Raghunath Das Goswami gave up accepting that money, then he used to go to the chatras. There was places where they gave out free food. And he would just go there once a day and accept his meal there. But after a while, he thought, this is not very good. I don't want to be dependent on these places and, you know, wait in line with all these people who are needy. So he resorted to just standing at the Singhadwara gate. And when the pujaris of the Lord would come by, they would give him some mahaprasad. And he would just live on mahaprasad. So he would just happily chant and wait there and just do madhukari. And whenever he got something, he would just eat that. And Lord Chaitanya was very pleased. He got reports always from Swarup Damodar. But then later on he said, he thought that this is not very good. Because this person is coming and I'm thinking, oh, this person gave me some foodstuff yesterday. Maybe he will give me something to eat today also. So his mind, you know, so he was analyzing. A saintly person is able to analyze his own mind. The introspection, the ability to introspect is very highly developed, very sensitive. Not just towards others, but towards oneself. What's going on inside, the internal life. And then this person, he has so much food, but he's not giving me anything. What is this? Doesn't he see? I'm starving here. I'm a beggar. Like that. So one is making calculations like that. So he thought, this is not very good. So he gave that up also. And he went to where they threw the shopkeepers. They're getting the mahaprasad and they're selling it. And whatever has not been sold, after some time, it gets stale. And the rice outside, it may rot. So they would throw it out over a wall. And the cows would go and eat it. But sometimes the rice is so rotten that even the cows won't eat it. And he would take that rotten rice and he would wash it with a lot of water. And there is that little hard white portion in the middle. And he would take that and he would eat that. That was his food stuff. And when Lord Chaitanya heard that, he was so pleased that he went there and he forcibly took some of that. He said, Raghunath Das, I hear you are here having great feast. You're having wonderful prasad. And Raghunath Das got very embarrassed. He did not even want to show the Lord what he was eating. But Lord Chaitanya forcefully, he took some of that and he ate it. And he became ecstatic in love of Krishna. So, we should not make elaborate arrangements for our own sake, but for the sake of satisfying the Lord and the Lord's devotees and for the sake of preaching, we should make wonderful arrangements for distributing prasadam. Just like now I was in Australia for 11 days and they have more than a dozen, maybe 15 restaurants and they have catering going all throughout Australia, which is going to all the big events. Events are like music festivals, outdoor activities, different gatherings where thousands and tens of thousands of people gather. And the devotees go there with trucks, big trucks, and trailers. And they cook massive, full feasts. And they sell the prasadam. And sometimes it's also free prasadam distribution. And just simply by giving the people prasadam, they have been able to curb the envious tendency of the population. You can go out on the street and nobody even does have an envious bone left in their body. Sometimes somebody may try to
bite you. But there is no more teeth, you know, the poison fangs have been removed. So they just, you know, there's no more teeth to actually bite you. So you become quite shocked. What is this? There is no more opposition. Nobody's objecting. Everybody just smiles when they see you. They all just take out money and say, are you from the Hare Krishnas? You sure? And you go like, yeah, you see, like, you know. Yeah. Then they say, okay, here, take. So they have become so favorable to Krishna consciousness. Why? Simply because they have tasted Bhagavad Prasadam. We should never underestimate the potency, the power of Bhagavad Prasadam. So you have a wonderful opportunity to distribute Bhagavad Prasadam to all of the inhabitants of this great city of Mumbai. And there is ample opportunity. There is so many living entities here who are starving for Krishna's mercy. So we should make great plans in how to give them Bhagavad Prasadam. Just like you're having this midday meal scheme, which is a wonderful way how to give Bhagavad Prasadam to the living entities. Somebody might have some business, sense of business idea, and open some fast food prasadam, vegetarian restaurant, or whatever scheme is there. And we can invite devotees, we can distribute prasadam. Everybody loves prasadam. One day I was distributing books in America, in an airport. And the person was not very interested, but at the same time, he was somehow attracted. You know this weird combination? When somebody, you know, somehow they feel affinity, they feel attraction, but somehow they're also repulsed. So they're a little confused, you know. They're in this borderline state of, identity, multiple personality disorder, you know, schizophrenia or identity crisis, you know. They don't know exactly which way to go, you know. Should I embrace you, or should I turn away from you? Or they're very confused. So he looked at the book, he looked at me, I talked, and he would just not buy the book. I tried from this way, 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 and he just would not buy the book. And he was still interested till it kind of clicked on him. And he said, deep-fried dough dumplings in strawberry sauce. So he was describing strawberry malpura. And he said, 7 years back in some music festival out in the country, I ate these deep-fried dumplings in strawberry sauce. Is this the same thing? Is this the same taste? I said, yes, this is the same thing. He said, how much? And immediately he bought the book. So those devotees who slaved and labored so hard to cook day and night and to serve that prasadam, they have distributed this book. I could not distribute that book. But that prasadam which he took 7 years ago, that prasadam, those devotees, they distributed this book. In the same way, you go out and you meet people who have tasted prasadam, it becomes 80% easier to give them a book. Because they're already trained up. You get something, you give something, right? They're already trained up. You get something, you give something. They're already trained. So we have to train people in the way of the loving exchanges. The dati pratigrinati guyamakyati prichati bunkte puchayate chayava shadvidim pritilakshanam. These loving exchanges, not only can you have them with devotees, you can have them with everybody. Of course, we have to be careful when it comes to the accepting part. what will we take? But like when I was young, I started book distribution when I was 15 years old and was going door to door. All the old ladies, they bought the book and then they went to the kitchen and they got me a bar of chocolate. And at the end of the day, I would have stacks of chocolate bars. It's a thing in Switzerland, you know, when kids come, you give them chocolate. Here it's cookies or sweets or whatever. So anyhow, Krishna is testing us. He's seeing, okay, are you attached? Do you want to eat chocolate? Krishna is testing us. Just like we have so many things which we are attached to. And now it's springtime, right? So it's time for spring cleaning. We have to clean our attic. We have to clean our basement. We have to clean everything. Also, in your brahmachari, you only have your little cupboard. You clean it. You clean your mind. But then when you do your springtime cleaning, whatever comes up, Maya, you know, she has to show it to you and say, what about this? Do you still want this? Do you still need this? Or can we throw it out? It's like when you hire a company to clean out your basement before they throw out all the stuff. They say, what about this? What about that? You still need this? You still need that? So Maya comes and says, what about this? What about that? We say, throw it all out. Don't ask me. She said, yeah, but you put it all in your basement. You collected all this gunk, all this junk. So now I have to ask you, you want to get rid of it? So when we are engaging in Harinam Sankirtan, all these things come up, all these unwanted things, they come up to the surface like bubbles. And we're surprised and we think, what is this? All of a sudden, you know, I didn't know I had all these things in my basement, you know, and we have to give them up. But if we think, oh no, I might need it, you know, for a rainy day. Let me just, you know, in case, plan B, in case this doesn't work out, just keep a suitcase full of stuff at your parents' home, you know, just so you, in case this brahmachari life may not work out, that I have something, you know, to fall back on. No. We should not keep any plan Bs. Huh? We're only going for plan K, huh? Plan Krishna. What is that? Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Ram, 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 Hare Hare. So, we should be a bumblebee, not a chubby bee. Huh? We should not become chubby and fat. Huh? We should be fit in Krishna consciousness, not fat. And the bumblebee is different than the fly. Fly is always going for the dirt, for the stool. Whenever you have an open sore or some cut, immediately fly is coming, seeing the defect. But the bee is going for the nectar. So when we go on preaching, we should not be disturbed when we see that there is a flower and already another bee is there. Already devotee is busy preaching to that person. We should not be disturbed and say, hey, this is my contact. I have to preach to this person. He's mine. I own this person. No, we should be like a bumblebee. If some other bee is there collecting the honey, okay, never mind. You go to another place. You don't start fighting a war, you know. There's enough flowers out there. Huh? Don't be attached. And also don't stick around, don't stay for too long. Otherwise the lotus flower in the nighttime may close up and you're trapped. And in the morning you're dead. Huh? So you should not spend too much time with every person. But Madhukari means you just go from person to person, you just collect the nectar. There might be other things, but you just go for the nectar. You don't bother about the other things. We just want to get the nectar. And every person has got some spark of good quality in themselves. Huh? Everybody. When we go out on preaching, we have to give people the benefit of the doubt that they are decent, that they're upstanding citizens, that they're gentlemen and ladies. Even though they might be ruffians. But if you treat them like a gentleman, they will start behave like that. Why? Because you project the good qualities on them. When Lord Nityananda and Haridas Thakur went preaching Krishna consciousness all over Nadia, Lord Nityananda, sometimes, he would go and preach. And even if there is only a tiny spark of good quality, he would fan that spark and make it big. And if there was a person who was devoid of good qualities, he was like wet ashes, you know? If you have ashes, still a spark can come. But if you pour water on there, then no more fire, no more spark. So a person is like wet ashes, like black, sticky, and just, bah, you don't want to deal with that person. But he would put that spark
of Krishna consciousness in that person's heart and fan it, and the fire would ignite. So if we are very absorbed in the fire of Sankirtan, then we can actually put that spark in people who even themselves may be like wet ashes. You know how wet ashes smell? Like if something is burnt, you know? But still you can give them Krishna consciousness. If you are yourself very deeply absorbed in Krishna consciousness. So we should learn from the example of Srila Prabhupada, who has sacrificed everything for the sake of all of us. Srila Prabhupada has come from India to United States simply with a box of Bhagavatams and a small pair of kartals. And with that, he has spread the entire Krishna consciousness movement. There's more than 500 centers, so many gorgeous temples, like this Sri Sri Radha Gopinath Mandir. Very magnanimous, very, very opulent place. And so many centers are existing simply because Srila Prabhupada started this movement based on the books. Books are the basis. That's why Srila Prabhupada was always stressing so much. Where is book? Where is book? Where is book? That's why some of your devotees here, like Shyamananda Prabhu and others, are busy translating Srimad Bhagavatam, publishing Back to Godhead magazine, and the devotees are running around distributing books. Because the whole basis means foundation of this movement, is book distribution. If your basis, your foundation is not strong, your entire building will collapse and it will fall down. So, in our own spiritual life, we have to make sure that our basis, our foundation is also Prabhupada's books. That we read Prabhupada's books on a daily basis. And we don't just run around like a mad nut in this crazy city. And we say, I got no time to read, you know. I have the books in the home. That's good enough. No, we have to read these books. Now, how do you do that? You might say, I'm on the job 10, 12 hours. I commute. Well, when you commute, what do? You can read the book instead of reading the papers or talking on the phone. You can always get up half an hour or 1 hour earlier in the morning and read a book when your mind is fresh. So in this way, we should always keep these books in the forefront of our consciousness. And then we'll become empowered to distribute these books in vast quantities. We should make solid plans for book distribution and preaching. Like here in the city, you're very expert in manipulating material energy, in making money, in managing, in doing so many things. But if you cannot preach and you cannot distribute books, what is the use of your expertise? Prabhupada used to say, what is the use of you being an American if you can't do something wonderful for Krishna? In the same way, what's the use of you being a Mumbaite if you can't do something wonderful for Krishna? Just like the devotees. Simply by believing Prabhupada's instructions, they went and they opened centers. Not sannyasis, but householders. They went, Prabhupada sent them, and they went and opened centers in London, in America, in Canada, in so many places. And devotees who were just in the movement for a couple of years, and before they were listening to the Beatles and worshipping the Beatles. And then they went to London, and they preached to the Beatles, and they lived in the house of the Beatles, and they got an estate donated by George Harrison. Why? Because they believed in the instruction of Srila Prabhupada. And they were pure. Purity is the force. If we are pure, we can touch the people's hearts. Just like there's one person in Delhi, his name is Rakesh, Bhakta Rakesh Uberoi. And he has distributed in the December marathon 55,000 Bhagavad Gitas. He's a short fellow, you know. He's not tall. He's short. And he doesn't even wear a dhoti. He wears suit and tie. And he goes to the industrialists. And he brings them gifts. And he preaches to them. And he talks to them. And he flatters them. He does whatever it takes. And then he calls Gopal Krishna Maharaj and he says, he's ready. come now. So Maharaj jumps in the car and drives there and preaches to him. And then he says, okay, you should buy 10,000 Bhagavad Gitas. And the person does it. Why? Because he has faith that this person has to take these 10,000 Bhagavad Gitas. So we can distribute Srila Prabhupada's books in vast amounts or in small amounts. If you're a python and you can swallow an elephant or a horse, then you can distribute vast amounts of books. And if you're a bumblebee, then you just do it one by one by one. But in this way, all the people will become fortunate. For people are suffering. They're intensely suffering. Just to go to work, you may think it's normal because you have become conditioned to this sort of lifestyle. But if you take somebody from a different country, from a different place, I come from Switzerland, from the mountains, and you just try to train from Mira Road down to Grand Road, you see more people than you see in a month in Switzerland. And you get mistreated, abused, and disrespected more than you get mistreated in 1 year in any country. People step on you, they shove you, push you, elbows, this, that. It's like K1, you know, full contact fighting. You think this is normal. This is just, that's how we live life. So any hole in the ground is home if it's the place of your birth. If you're born under a bridge, you think this is home. This is my cherished home. But we're not from here. We come from a different place. We have a different quality of life. So, to make solid plans for preaching, this is what Srila Prabhupada wanted each and every one of us to do. Now, your congregation here in Radha Gopinath Mandir has maybe, how many, 10,000 members? How many? 2,000? No. How many people were there on Saturday? 2,000. Yeah, but that's the core. There is four. And how many people are chanting four rounds or eight rounds and coming to programs? At least 10,000. Huh? Shemananda's shaking his head. All right, let's be conservative. Let's say 5,000. Before breakfast, you know, you should not be too enthusiastic. Huh? So anyhow, you got 5,000 people who identify themselves with the Hare Krishna movement here in this congregation. If each and every one of these persons just takes 10 books and distributes 10 books a month, how many books is that? All of you fast brains. Huh? 60,000 in a month. Yeah, how many in a year? Not bad. 7,20,000 books. Simply by everyone doing 10 books a month. Now that's not spectacular. That's like every third day you do a book. Just like I'm traveling a lot on airplanes. So I always carry a Bhagavad Gita with me. And always Krishna puts the person right next to me who wants to get the Bhagavad Gita. Always. It's like a rasa, it's like a thing I have, you know, with Krishna. That, okay, who will be the person on the journey? Who will take the book? Sometimes it's on the check-in, sometimes it's besides you, sometimes it's when you wait for the bags. Like I was flying from Delhi to Calcutta, and there was a guy next to me. Smart, you know, smart-looking guy. He was not revealing too much about himself like that. And we started speaking about Bhagavad Gita. So, but then you can't just pick up the newspaper, you know. You have to pick up the Gita. Otherwise, they will not buy the Gita if you pick up the newspaper. You have to pick up the Gita. So, pick up the Gita, and he goes like, oh, Bhagavad Gita. I say, yes. So I start speaking about Arjuna and this and that and the other thing. And he's one of the top people in anti-corruption unit of the government, of the police, internal investigations, flying around to investigate the big cases. He gave me 500 rupees for Bhagavad Gita. For 2 hours, we're just speaking about Bhagavad Gita, duty of a kshatriya, and so on. Another time, I'm flying. There's a businessman sitting next to me. He's got 5,000 employees. And he's very much happy. Finally, he can speak about something different than business, you know. Finally, he can change the topic. He gave me 1,000 rupees for Bhagavad Gita. Another flight I was taking, this is just the last few flights in India. And besides me come this young couple, you know, young boy and young girl. They're very frivolous, you know, very like lovebirds, chirping around. And I'm like, oh no, you know, this will be hard. How will I give them the Bhagavad Gita? They're just so absorbed in themselves. But then a gentleman comes up on the road and looks at his boarding pass and says, excuse me, to the two, I think you're in the wrong seat. This is my seat. So they mistake the row, you know. So they had to move to another seat. And then this guy would buy the Bhagavad Gita. Then I was arriving in Sydney, coming from India down to Australia. I was waiting. We could not clear the plane because there was storm and lightning. And they have unions, so they say you cannot get out of the plane, and they also cannot clear the luggage. So we had to wait for 1 hour on the carousel for the bags to come. It was an Indian gentleman, consultant, account, CPA, working for PricewaterhouseCoopers. And so I borrowed his BlackBerry. BlackBerry's mobile phone, you know. And to tell the devotees, it's going to take a while before the bags come out. So he got interested, who am I, what am I doing here? So I gave him the Bhagavad Gita. So always, wherever you go, you got to have a Bhagavad Gita with you. Because every day you meet that one special person who will take a book. But if you don't have the book, how can you give the book? Just like Bhrigupati Prabhu. Wherever I see him, whether it be on the train station or in the Ratha Yatra or on the festival or on the street, I always see him with some books. That's why he's distributing lots of books. So if you want any secret about book distribution, you have to ask Bhrigupati Prabhu. He's distributing Prabhupada's books for almost 40 years now. Right? 36, yes. So, we have to make solid plans for preaching. In this way, our mental disturbance will go away. And this confusion will go away if we make solid plans for preaching. So we can learn from the bumblebee and the python in how to not be attached and just take a little bit from each place and not be bothered about place of residence, not be bothered about food, completely depend on Krishna for our maintenance and our shelter, and in this way make solid advancement on the progressive path to go back home, back to Godhead. So, if you want to become empowered in preaching and book distribution, you have to take shelter of Bhrigupati Prabhu. You have to take shelter of the personalities who know, who have experienced. This empowerment is available, but we have to be determined to become empowered. If we think, I'm doing fine, I'm doing okay, then we'll not be empowered. And it is the duty of the seniors to show mercy and to empower the juniors. Otherwise, they become useless. And the juniors also become useless. So, we should be so determined to get that mercy. Just like when I started to learn book distribution in 84, Rohini Sura Prabhu was our Sankirtan leader. We called him Grandfather Bhishma. He was very skinny and whitish hair. Still is skinny, whitish hair. And he was always very loving and caring. First thing he used to do if somebody joined the Sankirtan party, I remember very clearly, he looked at me and he said, you got no watch. We have to buy you a watch. If you don't have a watch, you will not know what time it is, when we should pick you up. So you will waste our time. So you have to buy your watch. So he took me to the shop and bought me a watch. I thought, wow, nobody ever bought me a watch before.
Then he said, you don't have proper clothes. You know, this is no good. You can't go out like this. This is not respectable, not representable. So he took me to the store and he bought me clothes. I thought, wow, you know, never ever somebody bought me clothes like that. So, and when we started distributing more and more, then we always asked him for mercy. We always asked him for blessings. I want to do 200 books today. He said, yes. He put his hands on our head. And we said, no, I don't believe. This is not working, you know. We don't feel the empowerment. We need your dust, you know. So we took his feet and put it on our head. And somebody might criticize, what is this? You cannot put, you know, your feet on the head of these people. It's just not proper, you know. It's not working out. Don't you dare. You go to hell, you know, giving your dust. And his mood was, let me go to hell, but let them distribute more books. That was his mood. And because we believed in the potency, we were able to go out and we did it. Just like many years ago, you heard of Buddhimanta? Yeah, you knew Buddhimanta. He was one of the original book distributors who traded books for petrol at the petrol station. He distributed many books. He was a big book distributor. One time he came back to the temple. Prabhupada was giving a darshan. He was talking. So many devotees, so many life members. Prabhupada saw Buddhimanta come in. His face lit up. Prabhupada started to unbutton his shirt. And he took off his kurta right in front of everybody. And bare-chested, he gave that shirt to Buddhimanta. So much was he pleased by his service. Then Buddhimanta, later on, he had leukemia. He was in Vrindavan. And he was suffering intensely. His memory was gone. Danudar Swami took Harinamananda and myself to him. And whenever Buddhimanta would start to speak about Prabhupada, his memory was completely sharp. And he was as lucid and as clear as you can ever be. And he just started to speak about Prabhupada. And he would say, Prabhupada gave me his shirt. What would he give you? You're distributing hundreds of books. We were just giving out a few books. What would he give you? And when Buddhimanta passed away, it was on Shivaratri. Later on, I heard that, for those of you who have heard this story before, please bear with me. Shivaratri, on that day where he passed away, was distributing almost 300 Mahabig books, about two full sets and two Srimad Bhagavatam sets. Everybody was just throwing money at me. I didn't know why. I didn't know what happened. It was just a regular day. But people were all just, you know, throwing money at me. And later on I heard that there was the day when Buddhimanta left this world. And I figured, because his life was dedicated to distribute Prabhupada's books. So Krishna said, okay, this is the day where he goes back. So today is free for all. Today just everybody gets. Everybody. Qualified, not qualified, everybody. They just get the books. Some days are like that. They're just special days. And we cannot understand it. So, but what is our position? We are sitting here in Mumbai. It's 2009. And we're thinking Prabhupada left this world 30-something years ago. But you can still get Prabhupada's shirt. When you go out and you preach and you distribute Prabhupada's books, you can still get Srila Prabhupada's shirt. It's available. Not easily available, but it's available. And when we go out, we endeavor to make preaching programs. Just like when your Guru Maharaj comes here to Mumbai, everybody's very happy to arrange so many programs for him so he can preach and have so many engagements to distribute Krishna consciousness. So in the same way, when we go out and distribute Prabhupada's books, we are making preaching programs. We are arranging preaching programs for Srila Prabhupada, because he will preach to every person we give a book to. So that is something extraordinary. That is something very wonderful. So please take this preaching and book distribution mission to heart. Always carry books with you wherever you go. And you'll be surprised. There will always be a person who says, are you one of the Hare Krishnas? Because in the West, we don't dress in dhoti and kurta. So, and then you can give him a book. So, please take this mission seriously. And in this way, by following the example of Srila Prabhupada and the Goswamis, we too can get a glimpse of understanding what it means to be a perfect person. Srila Prabhupada was a perfect person. And he was the perfect example of Yukta Vairagya. Accepting whatever is favorable for the performance and preaching of Krishna consciousness and rejecting whatever was not favorable. Thank you very much. All glory to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna. We have time for one question. Comment, critique. I guess everybody deserves breakfast after. Thank you for your patience. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.